Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. We have several guests, several gentlemen in the studio, and we have Mike.
Gentlemen and Mike, this has become a theme of Democratic Perspective. Yes, here we are. We got a lot of good stuff this morning, but hang on to your hats. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff.
Last week we talked about Trump and Russia, and we went into some depth as much as we could in 45 minutes. There's been a vast amount of new news about Trump and Russia. But today we want to step back from Trump tweets and the headlines and look at the details of what's happening by the Republican Congress, what the Republican Congress is doing. And we want to look at four different areas if we've got the time. And we want to look at what in the departments the particular department heads are doing, you know. And so if you look at the Environmental Protection Agency and you look at Department of Interior, you know, dozens and dozens of people are being appointed from the oil and gas industries to positions of power. So we'll start off.
Especially in the light of Steve Bannon's comment this week that the department heads were hired to destroy them.
Yes.
And we want to make sure that we make this clear.
Yes. The head of the EPA, people say, is the most effective. So let's introduce our guests and Mike and
Our ghost voices here.
Our ghost voices.
We got David Brushwood, a famous pharmaceutical expert here, going to talk about all kinds of medical things.
Hello.
Actually, focused medical things. And we have John O'Donnell, who's going to talk finance and that whole debacle. That continues, by the way. This is one of those, it's like watching a house burn and not doing anything. We all see it. We all know it. And then we say, it must be lunchtime. Let's go, you know. And so he's going to talk about doing away with Dodd-Frank and other financial stuff. Maybe he'll give us a few good stock tips at the same time.
Actually, why don't we go to Dave first? Because Dave wants to talk about some very specific issues of that affect health indirectly about food programs and stuff being cut.
Absolutely. If people don't have food to eat, then they can't maintain their wellness and they can't thrive. And for that reason, historically, we have had programs in the United States of America that have provided food to hungry people, anti-hunger programs. My concern is that the Trump administration wants to reduce taxes for the wealthy, and then they shrug their shoulders and they say, well, gosh, having reduced taxes for the ultra wealthy, we don't have any money to provide food for people who are hungry. And those people, if they're children, they can't learn because they don't have food to eat. If they are elderly, then they can't be healthy. And so I thought I'd review three programs. I know there's a lot to discuss this morning, and I can do this relatively quickly. What concerns me is that Mick Mulvaney, the director of the Office of Management and Budget, has basically said, these anti-hunger programs don't work. And I want to take him to task for that because I think he's wrong. And
what does that even mean, Dave? Because obviously they work in the terms of people getting more food.
Well, let me quote him. I don't want to misrepresent what he said. He said, we can't spend money on programs just because they sound good and great. Meals on Wheels sounds great. Again, that's a state decision to fund that particular portion, to take the federal money and give it to the states and say, look, we want to give you money for programs that don't work. I can't defend that anymore. We cannot defend that anymore. That's the direct quote from Mulvaney. Now, it's hard to know in that quote whether he's talking about block grants generally or about Meals on Wheels specifically. But let's take him for what he literally said, that he's talking about Meals on Wheels and saying it doesn't work. Doctors Callie Thomas and Vincent Moore from Brown University have studied Meals on Wheels extensively. Dr. Kali Thomas, K-A-L-I, and Vincent Moore, M-O-R, is his name. Look them up, and you'll see, as I found, a number of articles. I've just copied off one of them. The article says, providing more home-delivered meals is one way to keep older adults with low-care needs out of nursing homes. And they conclude, this article has suggested one potential mechanism to decrease spending on institutional care and allow older adults to remain in their homes is through a relatively affordable, well-established, and popular program, home-delivered meals. Now, it never occurred to these researchers that funding for Meals on Wheels would be reduced. Their research was, what if we increase funding for Meals on Wheels? And what they've shown is that the expenditures for Medicaid, through Medicaid, for nursing home care is drastically reduced. If we spend money through Meals on Wheels to feed senior citizens in their homes, they don't move to nursing homes too early. Medicaid doesn't have to pay for their nursing home care, and we save money. It's an invest. It's not a cost. It's an investment for which there's a return. The second thing I'd like to talk about is feeding hungry children. That's seniors. We have a lot of programs to feed hungry children.
We have an
children.
Excellent program here in Sedona, Meals on Wheels. Excellent program, provides a lot of meals for folks.
We do. I mean, all of these programs are in the Verde Valley in Sedona. All of these programs exist. And one of the agencies that's particularly involved with them is the Avapai Food Council, and I need to tip my hat to Amy Aussie in a phone call over the weekend. She provided me with a lot of useful information. A second thing that Mulvaney has said is, with regard to feeding hungry children, this is a quote, they're supposed to help kids who don't get fed at home get fed so they can do better at school. Guess what? There's no demonstrable evidence that they're doing that. There's no demonstrable evidence they're actually helping results, helping kids do better at school. That's a direct quote from Mulvaney, who wants to reduce taxes for the wealthy and then says, gosh, having done that, we have no money to help hungry kids. But then it doesn't do any good anyway. So I wanted to challenge. It just didn't make sense to me that that was true. And it doesn't.
Well, Dave, he's of all the congressmen, former congressmen, he's probably the most conservative about spending that could possibly have been picked for the job. He is an ideological extremist about spending. He doesn't believe basically any programs work, much less something so obviously that does work, like Meals on Wheels and aid to schools for food. So tell us a little more about it.
Okay, well, I absolutely agree. He's an ideologue. I mean, he's from South Carolina. You would think from his language and perspective, he would be from Oklahoma, but he isn't. He's from South Carolina.
Let's watch the anti-Oklahoma jokes here, Dave.
Okay, well, I just didn't
the
think...
The great state of Oklahoma.
The great state of Oklahoma. Say. Boomer Sooner and all that. Okay. So I wanted to challenge the lack of no demonstrable evidence. I'm not surely what he means. He may disagree with the evidence, and that's certainly okay. But to say there is no evidence flies in the face of the existing evidence. And the person who's done the most work on that is Dr. David Frisvold at the University of Iowa. He has a number, F-R-I-S-V-O-L-D. Just Google him. You'll find all sorts of things. In a policy paper, I'll just read you his conclusion. Overall, these results suggest that nutrition interventions improve cognitive achievement. In the long run, these programs make a difference for low-income students. Childhood health, nutrition, and cognitive achievement are important determinants of human capital as adults. This suggests that policies that improve a young child's nutrition not only have short-term effects of increasing test scores throughout early schooling, but they make a difference well into a child's life. And this is based on data. I'm not citing the data, obviously. You can find that yourself. So Mulvaney's wrong. He's just simply wrong. There is demonstrable evidence. Mulvaney got it wrong.
Does he even care, Dave, whether what he's saying is false or true? Or is he so ideologically narrow and bound up that he won't even look at the evidence?
I doubt that he'd look at it. What matters more to me is that we the people look at it, that we not to accept at face value what the director of the Office of Management and Budget says. He's an influential person. He's an important person. And he says stuff. If the American people believe it, then they might change their mind about what makes sense to them based on what they think the data say when there are no data that say that. I'm just concerned that as we focus on the Trump-Russia issue, and as the media focuses on hardly anything but that, there are these things being done behind the scenes that are really going to hurt some people, and this is one of them.
You had a third issue.
I have a third thing, yeah. It's SNAP, Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program, formerly known as food stamps. What Mulvaney says is, we need people to go to work. If you're on food stamps and you're able-bodied, we need you to go to work. So in order to force people to go to work, his solution is to reduce the budget for SNAP by $192 billion over 10 years. He figures if there is less money, then people will be forced to go to work. Well, the SNAP program already has an able-bodied work requirement. Again, this is a program that is not a cost, but is an investment that produces a return. It returns tax dollars to the Verde Valley and Sedona. We pay federal taxes, and the federal government through SNAP returns some of what we pay to them to the Verde Valley, and people use their SNAP benefit to buy groceries at local grocery stores.
It helps employ local people, of course.
It helps employ local people. Now, these folks, and I'm sure there are some who are loafers, as they are accused to be, but most of the people who receive SNAP benefits would love to go to work. Defining able-bodied is difficult. You can't just look at someone and assume that they are able-bodied because of the way they look. They suffer from depression, they suffer from anxiety, they suffer from ADHD, and for that reason, they just don't make good employees. Even if they are employable, they've got to find a job. I mean, you have to have a job that they can suitably achieve in order to be able to meet their requirements. So Dr. Craig Gunderson of the University of Illinois has written a book. It's called SNAP Matters: How Food Stamps Affect Health and Well-Being. And he has very persuasive conclusions. Craig Gunderson, G-U-N-D-E-R-S-O-N, he's a distinguished professor at the University of Illinois, written a book on this about how it is that if we provide food to people, they stay well. They don't go to the emergency room because they are sick, because they're well, because they have nutritional food. Now, also, they're able to work, so they're productive people because they have food.
You can't use the SNAP benefits in like a convenience store to buy a giant Coke or something like that. And an awful lot of the people on SNAP are actually working. They just make so little money. I know a couple it's one of those things when they weren't married, they had some SNAP benefits. And then when they got married, even when they had three or four kids, then they got off SNAP benefits and they got back on. It's a program that's been around for a long time. The old story, I think, that all of us know is that in World War II, a tremendous number of the draftees were unfit to serve in the Army because of malnutrition. And that started the government. That's what actually started the government thinking about malnutrition. I've forgotten the percentage, Mike, but it was a very large percentage of people were just, they had too many medical problems, they were underfed, had all kinds of injuries, and they couldn't go into the Army.
Let me get this right. The government started a food program to provide cannon fodder for their corporate wars.
They started thinking about it then.
And so this is the flawless. Yeah, this is the U.S.
If you got food stamps back in the 60s, you got big things of American cheese. The program, folks, was to help people get fed, but it also supported American agriculture. It still does, because all this money is being spent mostly to buy American food goods produced by people here in the United States. So that's the other side of it.
I got to do the Mike Housing. So we needed a study. We needed a study to find out that food is good for people that don't eat. We needed a government program so we could, because we found out how come we didn't know this? Because people presenting themselves to the military weren't healthy enough to get in. And the experts there said, oh, they're not healthy enough because they're not eating
properly, exactly.
Yes, in I delivered meals.
Now, that's a long time ago, but that's how it begins. That's how
I delivered Meals on Wheels in the Brody Valley, and I think it's about 300. I mean, it's an incredible number. And they just had a fundraiser this weekend at a restaurant in Old Town Cottonwood with a bunch of local musicians to help add funds to Meals on Wheels. It's the other thing that, of course, everybody mentions, which is true, that you, the Meals on Wheels delivery person, may be the only person that person, the person.
There's a psychological therapeutic connection.
And it's a big moment in their lives, 5 days a week. They don't get it on weekends, and they come packaged. They can go in the refrigerator. This is the most cost-effective program I've ever seen, next to maybe food stamps. Is there some fraud in food stamps? Maybe. But if you've ever known anyone closely that's been involved or been involved yourself, it's really difficult to pull off any fraud. And even then, the amount's so little. So somebody's getting an extra $50 a month, $75 a month for food. Oh, my goodness, it's going to break the bank. So to go after these programs is like we're trying to do this morning. Look at the underbelly of the Trump administration, what they're doing. I'm waiting for my turn educationally. But let's talk about finance.
Let's go to John. John, tell people a little bit about yourself, your financial advisor. You keep promising to retire and you never do.
Yes. Well, my name is John O'Donnell, and I'm working with Taylor Padgett, an independent financial advisor, which kind of a career I chose after high school, teaching high school in the Verde Valley for 29 years and coaching. And I would prefer not to mention very much about myself, because most of what I have to do professionally has to be cleared by our ME
Okay, so financial collapse, 2008.
Right.
People demanded reform. The banks went bust, or actually the bank holding companies went bust that owned the banks. And we had the most catastrophic recession, depression since the 1930s. And legislation was introduced to ameliorate that. And it's called the Dodd-Frank bill, right?
Right.
So tell us a little bit about that. And what is the move now to kind of under the cover of all this Trump craziness to get rid of the one major reform of the financial institutions?
Yeah, I don't mean to be cynical about it. In terms of a reform, it took 3 years to get Dodd-Frank out of the Senate, and it was done with multiple amendments. And one of them said, well, Glass-Steagall separated commercial banking from investment banking. But we think
Glass-Steagall, the 1933 law that was ushered in the last time the economy collapsed because the banks were irresponsible.
So basically in the Senate, to get it out of the Senate, it depended on one vote. And we have a Scott Brown amendment that said, okay, we're going to separate them except for American banks should be able to invest 3% of their money in.
So the reform was really a compromise and kind of
exactly.
Weak to start with. And now they want to weaken it more? Is that what's happening?
That's exactly right. Because Dodd-Frank really expects banks to accumulate more cash reserves. Okay, so that's a primary thing that Dodd-Frank has. And it limits the amount of speculative investments that they're in, but doesn't eliminate it. And something like Glass-Steagall would. The Volcker Amendment would do the same, would separate the two, commercial and investment bankings. Totally.
So the problem is that even if the banks are solvent, if they're owned by a holding company that's insolvent, they're insolvent and we have to bail them out, or we did bail them out. Whether we have to or not is another issue.
Yeah.
But what's the most important? Why are they, if this is a fairly mild-mannered and very moderate reform, why are they trying to undo it? Why are they trying to undo a compromise that took 3 years to get out of the Senate?
Because, you know, bluntly, they would have more than 3%. They would be able to invest more than 3% in speculative investments.
And speculative investments are largely what brought down the economy.
All these
derivatives. And so what happens is they separate the banks, but they separate the banks and they have the holding company that owns the bank. And technically it's the holding company that's speculating, but it's the it's the bank's resources that are being used. And so that's why you want to keep the cash reserves that banks have.
Exactly.
Because if they're called in, you need large cash reserves. And what happened was the breakdown in how much they needed in terms of cash reserves. At least that's one small element of it. What else, John? What they passed this in the House, did they?
They passed this, yes. It's left the House. It's yet to be taken up by the Senate. And the Trump administration said that they're going to review Dodd-Frank. And in studying this, I was perplexed, because Dodd-Frank is such a mild restriction on banks. It basically asks more cash reserves and limits to 3% the amount of speculative investing. The issue with that, because we think of 3% as being fairly insignificant, but it's $8 billion for BOA. It's $18 billion for Goldman Sachs. That's 3%.
So they're already investing that kind of money in speculative
investments.
Devices,
right.
Yes, investments.
Yeah, it can be anything. Credit default swaps is what did us in 2008. And
we won't try to explain how we did a few years ago.
Well, yeah, basically it's bundled mortgages, and they're subprime mortgages, so they're high-risk mortgages, and they're only as good as somebody doing the work in the banks, somebody who takes a look at the client and decides whether they can pay. So how well they're underwritten really determines the quality of the bonds.
But they weren't supposed to fail, John, because they bundled all these bad mortgages, or subprime mortgages, as they're technically called, together. So that was supposed to make them safe.
Well, what was supposed to make them safe is that they were backed up by real property. And it was highly speculative. We had a bubble where people were buying things without any intention of paying off mortgages. They're just turning things over quickly. I would like to point out that one of the things in letting a bank go, Lehman Brothers went, and when Lehman Brothers went, their bonds became worthless. And one of the reasons, because their bonds were worthless and were held in a lot of mutual funds and places with money market accounts, kind of the rule in a money market account is a dollar in, a dollar out. And this is the first time in history that a dollar went in and only 85 cents came out. So what happened was we had a credit freeze. And I don't know if you remember then, but companies like General Electric went begging for money. Warren Buffett, I believe,
auto
funded.
Industry?
Yes.
And those damn liberals bailed them out. That's what the conservative, that they talk about it all the time, that the liberals bailed out their corporate masters.
Well, the idea of letting the marketplace make the choice, Lehman Brothers showed that marketplace couldn't afford that choice.
So what's wrong with 25% unemployment, John? I mean, the market, if the market says that's what it is. I mean, that's, you know, starving people. Let's talk about education. In a dynamic economy, education, you think, would be a factor, and is in most countries, and it isn't ours. But our false choice, Al Jazeera said that the false choice, and so have many other sources, by that charter schools offer a false choice because it's all about racial and class segregation. It started that way, and it is still going that way. One of the things we're going to see, I don't believe it's aired yet, on PBS is the DeVos 3. PBS is doing a 3-hour puff piece on charter schools, and they're going to go around and tell you about all the successful charter schools, and there are lots of them. There's some wonderful charter schools, and we're going to define here for the purposes of this discussion, a charter school is a private school that receives tax dollars. Somebody thinks this is a good idea, and they've been experimenting with it for 20 years. And other people believe it's funneling money away from the public school systems that need it so badly. And they characterize the public school officials as being these monsters that won't let the dollars flow to these charter schools. So the 3-hour special on PBS, and some liberals are just outraged that of all things, PBS is airing this one-sided supposed documentary that's going to go around the world and the country telling you about how we're all these places where privately funded education with public dollars, private schools with public funding, excuse me.
She's a billionaire. Her husband is a billionaire. She's the daughter of a billionaire. Her kids never attended public school. She never attended public school. She has no teaching experience, no administrating experience,
yes.
And yet she's deciding how education dollars get spent.
The theory is that somehow this is the antidote, that vouchers and charter schools are the antidote to low scores in public schools. There's not ever been a successful study that says that they are the antidote. And the charter schools were supposed to be the unregulated experimental section where you could try all sorts of educational innovation. So far, nothing has come out of charter schools that smacks of innovation. But we want to talk about the Betty DeVos, the PBS special, the one that is going to justify all of her movement of her change, her huge change. In this case, vouchers, where the money for education follows the student. But this thing is funded by the Rosemary and Jack Anderson Foundation, a very conservative foundation that is a major contributor, and this is the way these things work, a major contributor to the Friedman Foundation for Educational Choice, which advocates for vouchers. The Anderson Foundation is allied with the Donors Trust, whose donors make contributions that cannot be traced to them. Mother Jones referred to this foundation as part of the dark money ATM of the conservative movement. These are the people that are funding the PBS special that I'm talking about. The second major funder is the Prometheus Foundation. Its public filings with the IRS show that $2.5 million last year went to the Ayn Rand Institute. So to say that the funders of this the supposed documentary have an agenda is true. I mean, it's obvious.
So what's wrong with them having an agenda?
Well, it's paid propaganda. They can have the agenda they want, but this is a program on PBS that's showing one side of things, which you're not going to see on the PBS special. You're going to see there's schools in Oklahoma, believe it or not, charter schools that are working. And uninformed viewers will see this slickly produced, expensive documentary that's going to tell one side of the story. What they won't see are the high levels of social segregation in places like Chile. They won't see that students with disabilities, even a cursory Google search of vouchers and charter schools will yield you dozens of articles that talk about how students with disabilities are not served or if they are, they're underserved in charter schools. And that's the idea, that the competition is for the top schools. The American Indian School in Oklahoma has no American Indians in it. It's 60% Asians, American Asians, in a county or in an area where they represent 12% of the population. So
I think that's a pattern there, right, Mike?
They're recruiting a certain kind of student because they want certain results, and which has nothing to do with the public education goal of education, what has been a foundation of American economy and culture for a long, long time.
So they're recruiting good students, and then they're coming up with good statistics, and they're taking the cream off of the crop of students. Is that what they're doing? And apparently it's very profitable in Arizona for the people who own these schools, including Sylvia Allen, who owns a chunk of it and is our representative.
Well, I've said this on the show before, but when you see Forbes magazine and other and Bill Gates recommending charter schools as an investment, because let's think about it. This is just if we wanted to take a dozen of our shows of the last few years, it's just how can conservatives spend their days and nights trying to figure out how they can get their hands on public dollars, and lots of them. Defense wasn't enough. Halliburton getting billions and billions and billions via all our wars was one way. Getting billions and billions through private prisons is another way. Getting billions and billions now, although it's been a harder fight, because when it comes to education, it's people are don't buy it, but it's the same system. You got the money goes with the student, and that sounds just so wonderful and so fair. Oh yes, parents should decide how to spend their educational dollar. But the idea is that if you build it, you have an institution, you take over an old shopping mall, and you pay teachers crap, and you don't clean it, or you just control those factors.
There's almost no inspection,
salaries,
right, in Arizona.
And make it a horrible place, and people can't make a living. That students, teachers are selling their lessons to students on the internet, and people see this whole free market thing as the answer to low scores in public schools, rather than looking at why students might score low in a public school. Maybe better teaching, maybe more money, maybe better lessons, all the other things, maybe involvement, maybe finding a way to get parents involved, all the things that have worked for years and years until the public schools were abandoned.
I'm just gonna underline it. It's a big for-profit business in Arizona, and legislators are profiting from it big time by all these various different scams that we went into a few years ago. But I think the what I hear you say mainly is that Betty DeVos has something else in mind other than supporting charter schools. She wants to undercut public schools, right, Mike?
Absolutely. Yeah, she believes. But I do want to mention the Arizona role. What's going on in Arizona is really low public funding. Right now you have terrible, terrible salaries for teachers. And yet you have achievement in the middle. Forbes has a thing called Wallet Hub, I believe, where they take schools and they rate them. They take states, I'm sorry, and they rate the best educated and the worst educated. But it's on a 20-point scale, which would be a whole show for those, you know. But at least it is a diverse scale that they rate the states on. And I like it they call it Wallet Hub, because it directly ties education to the economy, which it should be. But Massachusetts is number one. West Virginia is number 50. And Arizona is in the middle, or at least close to the bottom, but not in the bottom 10. The dedicated educational professionals of Arizona keep doing their job. When if I was in charge, they would be striking, they would be on the street. But they're too good. There are good people who care what they care about kids. And the state legislatures of Arizona and Betty DeVos thinkers take advantage of that, especially in Arizona. They have been so taken advantage of because they care for kids and they keep the achievement off the bottom.
I wanted to switch a little bit, Mike, and talk about a couple of issues. One of them is one we don't know a lot about, and that's the repeal of Obamacare. It's being done now secretly in the Senate. I think there are 14 senators, something like that, involved, and nobody else really knows what's happening.
And 13 male Republican senators.
They're called
male and Republican are the two. Yeah,
right. And it's called a vampire politics because they can't the vampires, i.e. the.
It happens in the dark and they're sucking blood.
Yes. That's why they're calling it vampire talk. We don't know much about it. One of the online magazines, a good one, Vox, went and asked a bunch, I guess it was 14 different Republican senators, what was the aim of what they were doing, and no one could tell them. I mean, they couldn't even come up with a justification for the kind of so-called reforms they were doing. They didn't have an explanation of why they were changing things. They didn't have an answer to the question.
Well, we know why, don't we,
yes,
Stephen?
Yes, or tell us.
Well, because it's just a tax cut for the rich. That's why, and they couldn't say that out loud.
No. And the other thing about it is they're really, it's really just an anti-program. They promised they would do this. They complained about Obamacare, and the truth is that Obamacare was structured in a very conservative, market-oriented way, and so they couldn't actually replace it with a wonderful, better program. All they can do is either cut the funding to it or limit the treatment possibilities. There really isn't anything else much they can do with it unless they go to single payer, which is not likely to be a good conservative position.
And this is the silliness of this child's game that we're playing out on the national scale, that this is an Obama program. It gave health coverage to 24 million Americans that didn't have it. And it was and on that basis, even though the Republican governors tried hard to kill it, it still is moderately successful on all these people having coverage. So, of course, Trump wants to kill it because he wants to. Did you hear the latest that Trump has condemned to death the five turkeys that Obama had pardoned during his tenure? No, they're on death row now. That's the depth of how much that Trump has
They campaigned against Obamacare for years, and then they didn't have a real replacement, either in the House or the Senate. We'll do a whole program on it once we get a look at what this thing is like. What they're doing is they're doing it all in secret. They're not even talking very clearly. They're giving an outline. One of the Republican senators said
they're not talking about anything, Stephen. They're just waiting to get the votes. They're not talking about squat back there. They're talking about where they drank last night, and snorting cocaine off their aged thighs is what they're doing.
Waiting to get enough votes to pass
this horrible bill.
One of the Republican senators said that they gave them a slideshow outlining what they were doing to the other Republican people who are not on the committee. And he said they flipped through the screen so quickly they couldn't even read the slideshow. So this is something they really don't want you to know about. And they really don't even, they're even shy about letting their fellow Republicans know about it. But they're going to pass it because the political fallout from claiming that you're going to reform something and then you're not being able to come up with real reform in any reasonable sense. They're afraid of the political fallout, the battle in 2018. I did also want to talk about what's happening to the EPA. Scott Pruitt from my native Oklahoma is apparently dismantling the EPA piece by piece, program by program. He's replacing scientists with industry representatives. EPA, he's breaking the regulations. Now, older folks, we remember when rivers caught on fire and you had trouble breathing in L.A. and so forth and so on. So they're undoing all of these programs very systematically. And he was brought in. He sued the Obama administration, EPA, a dozen times or so. I have the figures in front of me if I could dig them up, but the oil and gas industry in Oklahoma has been a major funder of Scott Pruitt since he began his career. I think they gave him.
Well, you're looking for that. Let me squeeze this.
Several hundred thousand bucks.
Yeah. We want to thank Democrats of the Red Box and for their help in printing on Democratic Perspective. They've been great supporters over the years. They will have their July breakfast on the 20th. Stephen Nuno will be talking about immigration. So they have that over at Old Sedona Bar and Grill.
Mike will be interviewing him after the program?
He will be on Democratic Perspective sometime after that. And you can but go to the breakfast anyway. And we get an extended interview with a lot of the DOOR participatees. So you want to? We also have their other breakfast August 17th. Tom O'Halloran, a Sedona favorite, will be at the August breakfast on August 17th. We want to thank El Portal, Mr. Steve Segner, and his wonderful crew over there. Who, if you want to take a shot at Steve Williamson, you can do that at El Portal right after the show. A verbal shot we're talking about here, and we can discuss politics. Steve has been a great supporter of Democratic Perspective. And don't forget our show on Saturday, 12:15. We have another broadcast of this show in a much more relaxed weekend environment. Speaking of which, if you like Democratic Perspective, or at least if you like the exchange of ideas on the public airways of the Verde Valley and Sedona, it costs money to keep it on the air. So you can go to our website, vvid.org, vvid.org. We has all our old shows. You can listen to the likes of Howard and Noam Chomsky and many others that we've had on over the years, and certainly lots of state people, as we will have on. We'll have all sorts of candidates. We believe it's a great public service, as do our other supporters. So please go to our website, throw a little cash our way for the future of democracy here in the Verde Valley.
Not only is the EPA being destroyed, but the Department of Interior has a new head, and he's deeply involved with the oil and gas industry. He's from Montana. I think he got $360,000 from them or something the last time he ran. He's appointed people to, like, the Bureau of Standards and Safety and Environmental Enforcement. One of the guys made about $1 million from Sunco. The Interior Department, the people who are managing our public land, are being systematically replaced by people from the oil and gas industry in many positions. Zinke has also taken the department, and it's hard to understand what he's done, folks. Probably should have a program on it. But he's jumbled the entire leadership. Now, when you go into reform a place, you look at things very clearly and you move people around. But this is a huge jumble, as if he took people who knew how to do their jobs and shipped them off somewhere else where they don't know or not are experienced in. It looks like an attempt to break any kind of resistance to bad policies. And it looks kind of irrational. Most of us who've worked in business and stuff have been through these kind of reforms. This one's very strange.
This is a strange deal. Speaking once again on economic terms, if you want to call it a green economy, it's such a great source of jobs. It's such a great source of health. It's such a great source. And yet these Steve Bannon and Donald Trump are going after environmental protections. And it's one of those things that it's like going after Meals on Wheels. Makes no sense other than cruelty and idiocracy.
And they're looking to undercut our national monuments and lands. And I don't know where people are going to, if you live back east, I don't know where you go fishing and hunting and hiking on people's private lands. Doesn't work that way.
We have this show and other shows on vvid.org. Please check it out. Please go to our website. Verde Valley Independent Democrats bring you Democratic Perspective. And don't forget our Saturday show, 12:15. We have a rebroadcast of this show and then we are on every Monday at 8:15. Please join us. Democratic Perspective, folks.
You've been
listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news and our Saturday replay after the noon news right here on AM 780 KAZN. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.